Welcome to Forests, Folklore, and Fantasy. My name is Kelly, but I write and publish under my initials as K.M. Rice. Wherever you are when you happen to be listening to this, I would like to thank you for giving me some of your time and let you know that you are most welcome here. In today's episode, I am excited to share a little bit of my hitherto private writing in a similar way to what I did in the episode Mountain Maid, in which I talked a little bit more about my upbringing in the mountains and a more rural lifestyle than a lot of people live, and how that has affected my personality and growth as a person, and of course informs my perspectives when I'm sharing information about agricultural societies and the natural world. In a similar fashion, I would like to provide some insight into my experience as someone born female, living in a female body, who very much identifies as being female, and how that has likewise shaped who I am, the art I create, and my perspectives. This is going to get a little bit personal, because it's a bit of a personal episode, even though there's a lot of us out there who identify as female. But hopefully it will be an enjoyable discussion, and hopefully what you learn about me in this episode will help you put some more of my my writing and who I am behind the microphone into context. Just to clarify at the outset, this is not political remotely. This is not reinventing the wheel. This is just me sharing some of my reflections and my lived experiences as a woman, because sexism is something that has already come up several times in this podcast. For example, in my interview with Caitlin from Tea with Tolkien and with Lauren from Lauren Does Cosplay, we both spoke to our experiences as being female content creators and what is perceived to be a very male-dominated space, which is the fantasy genre or fantasy fandom or Tolkien fandom. Star Wars can be, of course, included in that, but I'm not a Star Wars content creator, so I don't feel comfortable speaking to that. But suffice it to say, there are still some sadly toxic geek spaces, and since these conversations have naturally come up with some of my guests, I would just like to give you an idea of where I'm coming from when I'm asking some of these questions of my guests. My earliest memory of confronting sexism, I want to say, was when I was around 5. And the reason that I can point to that early age is because my mother taught me and my older brother — I'm one of 4 children, by the way, I'm the second oldest — she taught us what the word meant. I'm an elder millennial. I was growing up in the 80s and the 90s, and the world was a very different place back then. We didn't have the internet, and most of what we learned from the outside world, other than from going to school and family, was from films and the occasional TV show, though we didn't grow up watching a whole lot of TV. And I can remember playing with my older brother amidst the oak trees, climbing the trees and having fun. And, you know, I'm saying having fun, but we played the same games over and over again, and I started to get really bored. We would say, let's go play Star Wars. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to be Han Solo, or I'm going to be Luke, or I'm going to be Chewie, or I'm going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi. And my brother would be like, well, you can't, because you're a girl. You could only be Leia. And I'm like, okay, she's cool. I'll be Princess Leia. What does Princess Leia do? And he's like, this is what she does. And this is great, because I'm Luke. And we're just like in the movie, like brother and sister. We had a rope tied to a bow. And we would kind of jump, and he would try to hold me and pretend we were swinging over a chasm, like they do in the first Star Wars film. And he's like, that's what Princess Leia does. I'm like, yeah, it is pretty much what she does. And we just kept doing that. And then we would be like, let's go play Ewoks, because as I think I've revealed before, I had an obsession with the Ewoks from Star Wars. They're these little fuzzy bear guys, if you haven't seen them. They're pretty cute. And again, I was kind of told, like, well, you should only play certain roles. Not to get too into it, but there was another brother-sister adventurers in the Ewoks, the Battle for Endor. There was Mace, the older brother, and Sindel, the little sister. And not to diss either character, but Sindel spends a lot of the time in that film sick and, like, in bed. So, again, not really exciting if I was expected to stay in my lane based on my gender. So, I remember getting bored with that. I remember playing Tarzan, and he was like, well, if you're Jane, you just kind of like sit around and drink tea and I get to swing from all the ropes. And I was like, well, screw that then. I'm Cheetah. Like, I'm the chimpanzee. And so I would sit on his back, and we found creative ways to get around it originally when we were trying to be, I'll use air quotes here, canon to the characters. It was very limiting. But my older brother wasn't necessarily into policing how we played or the characters that we played. We were just mimicking what we'd seen. Again, we were very young children. And I do have a memory, though, going back to using the term sexist, of playing some game with him in the Oak Grove where we used to always play. And he did say something to me that was incredibly limiting about what I could or couldn't do. And I remember running up the hill to the house and tattling and telling my mom, he said blah, blah, blah. And my mom's response was, well, that's simply not true. And in fact, that's sexist behavior. And you can go down and you could tell him that he's being sexist and that that's not okay. And I'm like trying to memorize this big word as a child. And I remember running back down to the hill or down the hill and pointing at him and saying, you're being sexist. And him just staring at me, having no clue what that meant, but being like, what is this new devilry? What is this word that she's throwing at me that she clearly got from mom? What's going to happen now? And he very quickly, as older siblings do, realized how he could manipulate me by using sexism. At one point in our childhood, we had a swimming pool. And if you don't know, swimming pools require a lot of work to maintain. And a lot of that was, you know, the stuff that we were capable of was put onto me and my older brother, such as scrubbing the algae. You'd have a giant scrubber brush, and you'd have to vigorously scrub the sides of the pool. And on one particular occasion, when I was a bit older, I swear I was wearing my pink corduroy overalls with some kind of ditzy flower print. Oshkosh overalls, I want to say. And I don't know where that's coming from. I've had a thing for overalls my entire life, and my closet is under threat of being filled completely with, like, dresses and overalls. But I'm digressing. We were standing at the pool, and he started scrubbing, and I think I'd been tasked with helping him. And I said, well, you do some and I do some, or whatever I'd said. Maybe I wasn't that magnanimous. Maybe I was just watching him work. And in a very Tom Sawyer-esque fashion, he said, well, listen, I'm okay with doing this. Okay, he probably didn't say that sophisticated. But he was like, this is something I can do because I'm a boy. This is man's work. And I was like, well, why? He's like, girls can't do this. Girls can't do this kind of thing. This takes a lot of muscle and strength. There's no way a girl could do this entire pool. Oh, he played me like a fiddle. I remember marching over and being like, give me that brush. Give me that brush right now. And he's like, I don't think it's a good idea. And I finally got it from him. And I was scrubbing away. And I'm like, I'll show him. I'm going to show the whole world. I'm going to scrub this pool. And this entire pool is going to be clean. And at some point, he came out onto the deck and was just watching me work with this smirk. And it dawned on me what had happened. That I'd been manipulated. And that it had worked. And we may have even had a conversation and a laugh about it. Another incident I can remember from childhood was we didn't have many neighbors, but certainly no other children around. Not consistently. But we did have neighbors who had grandkids who would occasionally come to visit. And when that happened, inevitably, we all wanted to play. And our dad had built us a treehouse. And it was me and my older brother's special fort, you know. It was in the oak grove where we always chose to play anyhow. And I just remember these two grandsons, who I believe were older than me, like around my age and older than me, taking over the treehouse with my brother, slamming the door shut on me and telling me it was theirs and there were no girls allowed. And the reason I still remember that is because of how powerless I felt. And ironically, I'm pretty sure my response was, fine then, fine. I don't need you. I don't need to play with you. I am going to go shopping. And I think I went grocery shopping with my mom. And maybe that was the plan anyway, because looking back now as an adult, I'm pretty sure if I had told my mom that that's what they were doing, she probably would have intervened. She probably would have been like, hey, it's not cool to exclude anyone. So maybe I was already planning on going shopping, but I remember just being so appalled that they would go into my treehouse that my dad built and my uncle built for me and my brother and say such a thing. And maybe a part of me was also feeling betrayed that my own brother didn't speak up, but we were children playing games. And if you don't know much about children, this is how children test boundaries and test friendships and test what they're capable of. And as an adult, I can also look back and say, my reaction fed into them feeling like, cool, I tested that and I got away with it. I can walk around the place saying, girls aren't allowed in their own tree houses. Girls are not allowed in their own family designated spaces and get away with it. That's actually pretty gross looking back. But unfortunately for me, that wasn't the grossest betrayal that I faced at the hands of boys as a child. And that story's coming next. So the story I am about to recount may be a small bit triggering for some listeners. And I just want you to know that I'm not going to go into any details because I just don't really feel like they're relevant. And I would like to preface it by saying I've never shared the story publicly before for a lot of the same reasons other women don't share stories like this. And it's because we very strongly feel that it does not define who we are and is not a label that we wish to carry around or do consciously carry around. And yet, I think it's incredibly important to acknowledge, at least in my case, how much an incident like this can shape and inform my worldview, or anyone's worldview for that matter. I didn't think this would be difficult for me to talk about because it's not something that I actually feel pain in my body when I talk about it. And it happened so long ago that it feels like it happened to someone else. It's just one of my core memories. And as you've probably guessed, it's... I don't even know. My attempt to bring this up so many times while I'm standing here at the microphone, I didn't expect this. And I'm leaving in a little bit of my stuttering just because I know a lot of other people can probably relate to this level of awkwardness. It's less awkwardness about sharing with you the knowledge that I am technically an assault survivor. I'm saying technically because, again, it feels like sort of removed from my identity. And don't worry, I've talked to professionals about this. I'm not just trying to avoid processing anything. It's more that it's just such a vulnerable moment, and I don't know who's listening. But I'm sharing it to help, sadly, normalize the experience of other survivors. This just feels so awkward to me because I don't even use the word survivor in Mountain Maine. I'd use the word wildfire survivor because that's what I am. I'm using survivor in this context, and it just feels foreign to me. It doesn't feel like something that I am comfortable putting on my experience. My guess is that I was about 5, maybe 6 when this happened. We were camping at a lake, and a family was camping near to us, and they had a boy, my older brother's age, and an older boy. I can't tell you how old he was. From an adult point of view, he was probably a teenager. But from a child's point of view, he was like just big. He was a big, manly thing. And we were all playing in the lake, and suffice it to say, he behaved inappropriately and did inappropriate things and didn't stop when I told him to stop and didn't let me swim away because he was bigger and stronger and could catch me if I swam away. A friend helped me reframe this incident recently by pointing out that instead of, yes, like that was a predatory thing that happened and I was a victim, but that I immediately knew it was wrong. And when I did get away, I immediately tattled. I immediately told that something had happened and it hurt me and I didn't think it was okay. And the adults dealt with it in the best way that they knew how to deal with it. I think the parents had a conversation, and my memory is very hazy because, again, I was so young, but I remember the boy coming the next day and crouching. He was big enough that he had to crouch to be level with me and apologizing and asking something strange like, we're still friends, right? Or we can still be friends. And I swear he held out his hand. And this is like the pivotal moment for me. He held out his hand like, let's shake on it or give me a high five. And at that young age, even though I knew somehow in my core, I knew that I had been violated by this person. I did not trust him and I didn't want anything to do with him or ever see him again or be near him again. I just knew that this person is not someone who respects my boundaries. I didn't have that vocabulary, but when I say no or stop, he doesn't. But already at that young age, I was so socially conditioned that girls are nice, that I remember feeling gross and feeling sick inside. And knowing, though, that if this were a movie, he's offering peace. I'm supposed to be the little kid who just smiles and says, yeah, we're still friends. And I did. I gave him the high five or I shook his hand. I did whatever it was. Really, probably just to make him go away. But that internal capitulation that nobody asked me to do, by the way, I don't recall any adult saying, hey, go make nice with him. I think he had adults saying, go make up for whatever it is you did. But that was a defining moment of self-betrayal that I think a lot of women can relate to, where I sacrificed my sense of physical safety and comfort in order to perform what I felt was what a, quote, good girl should do. That girls are nice, that we're peacekeepers, that we don't cause trouble, and that I already tattled on him, right? I didn't see if he even got reprimanded. That wasn't really in my realm, but I knew I'd kind of done my part. That was him doing his part, and I knew it was supposed to be over and done with then. But of course it wasn't, not psychologically. What that particular experience, and of course many, 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 many others, countless others, taught me was that there are men who are predatory, and that there are men who do not see me as a person. There are men who see me as a body. There are men who have been taught that that's okay, that it's okay to see me that way and to behave in such a manner. And I carried and continue to carry that worldview with me. It's also just pure survival. And it's very painful for me to know that there are a lot of men out there who are not predators and who don't just see women as a commodity or something that they have a right to. And yet, I cannot tell the difference between someone like that who is a decent human being and someone who believes that if they can get away with it, they should try to do it. A predator. And that does grieve me because I go for hikes alone often. And I've had encounters with men who I likely could have had a great friendship with, or at least a great chat about how much we love this hiking spot, the different animals that we've seen over the years. We could have bonded as kindred spirits. Instead, these men don't know that I had a knife. I won't get into details here because I don't know what's legal or not, but I always have a knife. Well, I do know what's legal. I have a very legal knife. But they don't know that I, before I even approached them, was ready to use it if I needed to. And that's just, for me, a normal part of life, that having to maintain this level of awareness and vigilance all the time because I don't know who's a bad guy and who's a good guy is exhausting. And I actually cannot think of a single woman I know who has not gone through something similar, something far worse, and who cannot relate to this taxing feeling of constantly having to maintain that level of vigilance, just existing. Of course, men must maintain this level of awareness as well, to a certain degree. But to every dude listening to this wanting to be like, well, hey, I've been through something too. You have, and I'm not taking away from anything that you may have been through. But my point is that this is universal for women. And it's rarer for men to constantly fear for their physical safety. Of course, there are situations and places, bars, sporting events where men are going to be more on the lookout for violence. But in general, most men I know have no problem walking around at night in an urban area Like the thought, my friend was telling me the other day how her husband was walking home from a local, not local to here, but they live in a more urban area concert. It was local to them because he'd had a, you know, a few drinks and he planned on that. So he planned on just walking home. And when she said, wow, and you felt comfortable doing that. And he said, well, why wouldn't I? And he's one of the good guys. I can vouch for him. And maybe that's why he had that innocent response of why wouldn't I? Because his mind doesn't work that way. His mind doesn't see other people as potential targets. But she shared that with me because she was like, can you imagine living like that? Can you just imagine that being your reality? And sadly, I can't. And that's why Lauren and I had the conversation we did about disguises, the disguises of costumes and how empowering it can be to feel intimidating, just for a few hours to feel intimidating to people who otherwise may treat you as subhuman or below the basic level of dignity that everyone should be afforded. This background has set me up to read to you just a little bit of my writing, and it really goes to show that I felt the need to quantify my experience being predated upon in order to give background to some of the anger that I live with all the time as a woman in the United States of America, because there's nothing universally more disliked than an angry woman. I innately knew that from childhood onward. Thankfully, again, my mom is a very worldly woman, and she always encouraged all of her children to do sports. And I grew up playing soccer, and I grew up playing rec soccer. And my nickname on the field by my teammates was Xena, because it was so therapeutic for me to have that physical contact with other players and with the ball, and to be able to let some of that aggression and frustration out, not just because of what I went through when I was a child, just from existing in life. Not all from sexism, from other things as well. But yeah, that was a big part of it. That was one of the only socially acceptable avenues a young woman could use to vent with her body and to run it out. I've always enjoyed running. And it's a very cleansing thing for me. But suffice it to say that still, as a society, women are often discounted when they're angry, whereas men are listened to. And again, I don't want to get into politics. I don't want to get into neuroscience and the differences between the brains of the average man and the average woman. Apparently, though, I felt the need to have this very large preface to justify why I at times am angry, which says everything on its own, pretty much. So I do a lot of writing that I don't share, and I am obviously going to share some with you now, but this writing is often in my journal, and my journals are a mix of very practical things, lines of poetry that don't have a home because the rest of the poem hasn't been written, random thoughts that I've had, random events that happened that I want to remember for later, and then musings. And these musings are very varied, but I'll call them poetic prose. And this is from, I would put this into my angry witch poetry category. That's what I call it. This is some, except it's not even really a poem. It's just, it's my angry witch stuff. So
Here we go.
There are many men who think they are woke. Woke. Awoken. When were they asleep? When my sister's flesh melted at the witch trial fires? Why did they slumber while my foremothers choked, force-fed, and beaten for the right to vote? Where did they snooze when I was mere chattel, unworthy of personhood, just a vessel for seed? I will tell you now, they were not sleeping. Their eyes were glued upon the stonings and burnings, beatings and thrashings. With dulled eyes, they saw our sisters drowned for sorcery, the sorcery of refusing to spread her legs for her master. With unflinching gaze, they shattered Willendorf and attempted to erase our names from history. No. No, they were not sleeping. They did not wake. They let, they allowed, they excused, and they ignored. If they have awoken at all, it was to the horror of having realized what a terror it is on the other side. They were fully awake all throughout history. To lighten it up a little, I then wrote one more line. Now is just a masquerade. And I think I got tired because then I drew an arrow to it and said, I'll leave this here for a future historian to argue over if it is part of the above writing or part of the below. Because then I wrote another poem below it. I mean, there are some people who want to dispute the fact that we live in a patriarchy. That's just categorically untrue. It's just the way our society is structured. It doesn't mean that it only benefits men or that it benefits all men. It's just structured for men by men. And again, not trying to delve into politics, but to me, this is just a fact like gravity. And this is how societies have by and large been for thousands of years. And the rage then comes from feeling disempowered in this society because I'm not part of that group. And looking to those who are part of that group to champion us, to take a risk, to challenge the status quo. And we just don't see it very often throughout history. Which makes me sad, but also makes me angry, as I was when I wrote that piece. So this next one is, again, I apologize, these aren't named pieces, but this next one I wrote several months later. Do you feel it? I hear it. That old rage is coming back. You know the one. It paces past yellow wallpaper and rattles asylum bars. What is it, you ask? You have to ask. It is the bloodied fingernails of having scaled a granite cliff, naked, only to be kicked off the summit by bloated old impotence and expected to do it again and again throughout history. History. His story. Look into your brain. The words are there, the very building blocks of our thoughts. His story, mankind, human. We are not part of the lexicon. We, the women, the womb, men. Even our own word describes what we are to them. That rage, that old rage, it is in your blood and bones. It is the primal cry of the witch at the stake and the virgin sacrifice. The mother in labor and the defiled girl. Takers, takers. They all take because they cannot earn, achieve, nurture, or grow. They can only take from us what we would not give. And so, we let loose a scream. Because the rage, that old rage, is your salvation, sister. As a small bit of trivia, around the time that I was playing with these ideas and writing these pieces was also when I wrote and edited the short film, Be Thou a Witch. And I will let the film speak for itself. I will just put the link in the show notes. I did it all by myself. I had a friend help me with the voiceover recording because I needed a male to be doing some of the speaking. So don't expect it to be like the greatest thing you've ever seen, but I am still quite proud that I managed to make a little something on my own that expressed a lot of these feelings and thoughts and emotions. So I do encourage you to check it out. Again, the link is in the show notes. This is all obviously a very serious subject matter, but I hope that the writing that I just shared and the stories that I've shared will be received with the intention that they were shared with, which is to enlighten and empower. Because sharing my story with other women has been incredibly empowering to me to find out that I was far from alone and that they had wonderful advice on how to cope and heal and move on and flourish. Of course, the elephant in the room is the tragedy that we form these bonds of sisterhood through trauma, through betrayal at the hands of men. Many of them men that we trusted. That is a tragedy. And I find it incredibly disturbing that in the same way that I accept our society is a patriarchy, in the same way that I accept gravity as a natural law, that we accept this incredible inequity and imbalance of power and abuse of power and this level of betrayal as, well, this is just how the world is. And to be clear, I wasn't saying that I believe patriarchy is part of any natural law, just that it has shaped the world I live in so powerfully. That it's not something I contest the existence of any more than I would contest the existence of the sun. So now that you know a little bit more about me and my inner world and the forces that shaped my perspective, hopefully you're not too scared. Hopefully instead you find a sense of being kindred spirits, because I firmly believe that you, my dear listener, and I are kindred spirits, or else why would you still be listening to this at nearly 40 minutes in? Now, I don't want to run the risk of being pompous or self-aggrandizing, but I am enjoying the process of being vulnerable by sharing more of who I am through, again, this hitherto secret writing. But I would like to know if you are enjoying it as well. Just because I am a novelist and a screenwriter doesn't mean that I have an innate talent for all things to do with the written word. And perhaps it's cringy. One never knows. I have, I believe, 10 published books, and it may dismay you to hear that even after having written so many novels and some nonfiction, that doubt still follows the creative mind. So please let me know what you think of this episode and if you would like me to be doing more like this. If you do happen to be listening on Spotify, there's a little poll there where you can answer this question. And yeah, just thank you for listening. I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so very much for your time. I hope it was of some use to you. I would also like to thank my patrons. Just as a reminder, you can hop over to patreon.com/KMRice or the links in the show notes to join at any time as a free member. There are different tiers with different levels of benefits if you feel so inclined to support me in that way. But you are more than welcome there as a free member. It's growing ever since I started this podcast, and I'm really excited by that because my intention has always been to foster community. And I see that starting to happen, which is a very rewarding and delightful experience. I would also like to thank all my patrons, and of course to thank the composer Lane Thomas for allowing me to use an excerpt from his track The Village from his fantasy-themed album The Lands Beyond, and the link to stream or purchase that album is also in the show notes. So thank you, dear listener, so very much for giving me your time and lending me your ear. Until next time, may your hearth be warm and your heart be full.